This is RSBNB Update, episode 592, recorded Thursday, November 3rd, 2016. Tearing up for Mining and Smithing. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for this episode of RSBNB Update. We got a jam-packed show this week about smithing once again and some patch notes to tide us over until next week's release. So, just myself and Mr. Bistro here this week, your favorite co-hosts of RSBNB Update. Welcome once again.
Woohoo!
Hello!
Okay, so this is a patch week, and normally these weeks are kind of a little bit subdued, let's say. But I don't think this week is going to be subdued. We got more mining and smithing stuff to talk about, and some really interesting changes in the patch notes to an update that came out in 2011. So, I mean, aside from patch weeks, I don't think this is going to be as earth-shattering as the one that brought in the Beast of Burden stuff in the bank, which I think is the best ninja fix that they ever put into the game. But we're definitely going to have some content to discuss this week that brings some nice quality of life stuff to the game. So, you good to go?
I'm good to go. Let's do this.
All right. Well, I guess since it is patch week, Jagex did say on the news posting that this week Bounty Hunter is pushed back to the 14th, so we did alert you guys of this last week and the week before. Just a quick word on that we hope it comes out, and we would much rather them take the time to get it right than to rush something out that is incomplete, especially when dealing with combat, and even more especially so when dealing with PvP, because we know what kind of situation PvP is at in the game and how much, you know, care that needs to make sure it's got right. So totally understand their decision-making process on that.
Yeah, it's only continuing to increase the hype. I'm getting more and more excited each day when this gets released. I think this will be like the only thing I'm doing for probably a few weeks.
Yeah, and I mean, if you have other players to kill, there's certainly something out there that's going to increase the adrenaline factor of RS. Because, I mean, you have Slayer NPCs and whatnot, but when it comes down to fighting a real person in a game, that is an entirely different equation, because they can think and they can do things that the NPCs can't do. And in some ways, you know, it can completely change metas of the game if someone comes up with a perfectly good counter to a specific tactic. And I think that that's probably why you're so excited about this, is because with evolution of combat, we can do all these interesting things that couldn't have been done before.
Yeah, and I said this before, but when Bounty Hunter was originally released, I really loved the concept of it, and I am really excited to give it another go with a much more advanced combat system now. It's going to be fantastic.
Indeed. Well, we do have some patch notes to discuss this week. A number of interesting things did pop in here. I'll just go through some of these. Feel free to jump in if you have any additional or you want to comment, as per usual. So starting out, Surge spells may now do up to level 99 spell damage in Daemonheim, only limited by your weapon's level.
I think that's unnecessary, but it's okay.
Okay. Was it not necessary? And
it's not necessary because it's affecting the triangle of usable combat styles in Dungeoneering, where everyone is either using ranged or mage. It continues to just bring melee farther and farther out of the circle.
All right. And do you think that, I mean, what Do you think that a level 99 spell damage in Daemonheim is needed to take anything out and that you would see at the end boss stage?
No. I know that ranged is the best to use in Dungeoneering with mage coming in second, but I've always felt most comfortable with mage, and I haven't ever really seen a difference in damage. So the fact that search spells now do up to level 99 spell damage means that that might become the new style of choice.
Yeah. All right. Fire Giants and Damenheim are also no longer weak to fire spells.
That makes sense. Yeah. I had to add that in there because they're fire giants.
Exactly. I mean, and I assume they'd be weak to water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Moving outside of Damenheim now, the log splitting scrimshaw is now triggered by cutting bamboo and golden bamboo in the arc. Previously wasn't, so that's good. And I believe that's the one that allows you to chance to chop the wood faster and get more XP. Yes? If I recall.
I don't know. I've never used that one.
Yeah. It's not one that I've used, but I'm vaguely aware of what it does. Moving on from that, they did add on to the urns, the urn update that came out way back in 2011, adding in decorated woodcutting urns, supporting up to level 99 woodcutting, including golden bamboo. So you can get that extra little burst of XP if you're, 90 plus woodcutting and you're chopping crystal trees or something like that, or golden bamboo. I don't think woodcutters going to 120 or level 120 will complain about that. Along with this, they've also added a decorated woodcutting urn crafting challenge, much like all the other urn challenges.
It's good.
Yeah, and moving back to the arc, they did add the ability to combine positive and negative energy into ancestral energy in your inventory by using them on one another, requiring level 95 divination. Previously, you did need to go to one of the other colonies. So if you had positive energy, you would have to go to a negative colony, and then they would combine themselves into ancestral energy. So that's good that has been removed. Because especially when you're starting out in the arc, I found that, you're doing a lot of island hopping to gather this energy because you don't find positive and negative energy on the same island. So this is good that you can just go to each island once and then combine them on your own if you do have the appropriate divination level.
That's good.
Decorated cooking urns now affect food with level requirements up to 99. Previously it was 95. And therefore, urns now work when cooking wabagong oil. So once again, caring about the people in the arc, and Jagex obviously taking notice from metrics about how much time people spend on their Uncharted Isles dealing with this high-level cooking and woodcutting stuff on the arc. So it's nice to see that the skills are being updated to account for that.
And that gives more incentive to go back there as well.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, we do have a question about that later, so it'll be interesting to see what the community thinks of the arc, a month or so from now, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Now, here's a really interesting one that seems kind of a case that I would see as combat being too fast and the system not being able to keep up with it. Simultaneously killing multiple armored zombies during Defender of Varrok no longer prevents you from bottling their additional red mist. Now, when you think of it, armored zombies, when this quest came out, were kind of difficult, and people did actually go there to train combat. But now, with high-level weapons and whatnot, EOC abilities, it is really easy to kill things simultaneously, so you could see why this would be a little glitch.
You know, I'm pretty sure I did this quest after EOC came out, and I don't think it was always broken. Because I remember actually being able to kill multiples at a time and getting multiple blood mists, and it didn't really affect my quest
at all. All right. Well, I mean, it's possible something else could have affected it, but, this is what I was going on about earlier in the start of the show, how you have updates that are quality of life, and, you don't normally see an update that deals with something so granular and so specific like that. It's nice to see in a patch week, so well done on this. The defense skill guide has been split into melee, ranged, magic, and other filters, and a number of issues with text and outdated requirements have also been fixed. That's good. After discovering a new bird on the arc, you will no longer have the option to inspect them again. So once again, nice little thing that, here's this bird, and I've already seen it, so I can't click on it. that's nice to know. Saves you a click from going into your journal.
Mm.
All right, so 15-year moat, the 2013 version, is now available for people to play. So 15 years of RS and focusing on 2013. What happened in RS in 2013?
I'm thinking a Queen Black Dragon.
No, that was 2011. I mean, 2012.
2011? You got to be kidding me. Did they do the God Wars graphical update?
Yes. It was the God update in which we did see the Ceridoman and Ceridoman versus Zamorak and later Armadyl versus Bandos event. So this emote is depicting those, except in a very unique form, where the gods get up from its chair where they were seated and then start bashing each other over the head with chairs, and then slowly but surely Zamorak is slayed, then Bandos is slayed. Of course, we know that Zamorak wasn't actually killed in this, but he does go down for the count in this emote, much the same way that Bandos did, which was really interesting to me to see from a perspective. It's kind of insinuating that they both went down the same way. But Bandos went down much harder than Zamorak did. But yeah, that's what the main focus was here. And I'm not sure why they would be depicting it as using chairs at the very beginning. And I mean,
less graphic.
I guess. And I mean, they got the woman here from Lumbridge who was overseeing the battle. So she's in that. Then on the podium, there's a photo of Guthix, which of course is the whole thing that kicked this entire thing off was Guthix's assassination. So, you know, 2013, a huge year for RS lore, and it's commemorated with this emote showing the gods beating each other down and a memorial to Guthix. So you can play that if you have the 15-year emote enabled. I just love how they're doing this and, you know, slowly trickling them out throughout the rest of the year. And, I mean, if you watch these things and you've been around since the very beginning, you can effectively see what happened in RS those years. And it is a good way of, you know, kind of, I guess, cataloging the years of RuneScape, yeah, and saying this was then, that was that, and here's how you can remember it with a simple quick little animation. So really like this feature for this year.
Yeah. Wasn't 2013 also the release of the new interface?
Yes, 2013 was, yeah. NIS, new interface in RS3. That's right.
Yeah, I forgot its acronym, so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, interesting they didn't put that in there with RS3, so.
Well, I think that one would have been a little bit hard to do.
Yeah, but, I guess. Because I remember we were supposed to
really
initially get
to remember
HTML5 with that, and then that failed, and of course that brought us to NXT. So maybe mm-hmm. that's why they didn't do it, because it would be hard to depict. Following from that, it is no longer possible to use magic combat abilities while not in combat to generate adrenaline without a spell set. Okay, so combat abilities while not in combat to generate adrenaline without a spell set. That's a certain mouthful here. So basically this means that the magic EOC abilities could be used when you weren't in combat and even when you didn't have a spell set to generate adrenaline, which when you think about it, that would be a perfect way of healing yourself outside of combat if you were had a few moments to yourself. So interesting little thing here, and it seems like it could have been abused by the player, so I'm glad that's been fixed.
I think it was abused just for players to get from one part of the map to the other just by using their surge and that kind of stuff. I would do all that stuff to make sure my adrenaline stays up. And it still works like that as long as you have the spell selected.
But yeah.
Otherwise, that's kind of a bummer.
I mean, if you had the spell selected, I mean, you can still use Surge whenever. And I know a lot of people who get around with that. So they'll just have to go around doing that. But, I mean, I was looking at it from a peer abuse standpoint, and I'm not one of those people who go around for surge and everything. So, I mean, it's not a huge inconvenience to me, but I can definitely see that side of the angle on it.
Yeah.
Speaking
and,
of surge.
Speaking of that one.
Yeah, go ahead.
You can no longer use surge to get around the trapped floor pit puzzle in Underground Pass, which whoever figured that out is a genius.
Yeah, because I mean, I believe it was a 5x5 grid, and you would need to effectively, you know, just step on it and see if you fell. And then if you didn't, then that was good. Then you basically tried the adjacent ones, and oh, there we go. Lo and behold, that's your path through the Underground Pass. So, whereas if you had surge, you just got to get one right, then you make it all the way to the end.
That's great.
Yeah, so long ago, you know. Mm-hmm. And you know, I swear I saw this in the patch notes before at some point being fixed, or maybe
I'm sure it has to get fixed all over the place.
Yeah, because I mean, this seems like it's been an issue before and it's been fixed, and it just feels odd reading it again. So I'm not sure when that might have been.
You might have heard the fix to surge across the Tirowin leaf traps.
Yeah, that could be one too. Also. With that, success chances on traps and obstacles in the Underground Pass has been increased. So, I mean, obviously they don't want people pulling their hair out when they're doing Underground Pass, which is good, because I remember, you know, aside from the combat at the end, dealing with traps and obstacles and failing them was perhaps the most annoying part of the Underground Pass quest.
And it almost doubled the length of the quest every time you fall.
Yeah. And I mean, when you're doing this quest, you're not someone who has 90 plus agility, right? You're someone who's in their 50s at best, probably. So, good this has been updated. I know lots of people will be thanking Jagex for that. And then, once again, another just quality of life update. Various multi-option jewelry teleports have been put into a standard interface rather than dialogues. And by standard interface, that's the one that pops up in the center of your screen. You can still use the buttons, to access it. So that definitely helps, I think. And, I mean, dialogue should be used specifically for dialogue, and that's one thing with, you know, interfaces in general, is you want to have a defined purpose for your interface. You don't want to be overloading and requiring it be able to serve multiple purposes kind of thing. Some of the items are the Ring of Wealth, Amulet of Glory, Combat Bracelet, Necklace of Skills, the Ardoian Cloak, the Pharaoh's Scepter and Scepter of the Gods, Draken's Medallion, the Six-Age Circuit, and the Tokel's O. Those are some of the items that are able to be used in this new dialogue, or this new interface.
The Tokel's O one's concerning.
Why is that?
I remember doing a lot of speed runs with my yak and prayer, and just having to hit three and then do a quick loadout on my bank sped things up really fast, and I wonder if that's going to affect it at all.
I don't think so, because I used one of these interfaces a few days ago, and I used the this is the same kind of interface that the Wilderness Sword has when choosing where you teleport with it, and you can still use the numbers with that, so it should not be a problem.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but that's a good catch there. I know that's how I did speed runecrafting runs as well. So. And for anyone wondering, the Tokel's O is the ring you get from the Elder Kiln quest. And
it's the best ring ever.
Yeah. I mean, it used to be the Castle Wars ring would be the one to use, but the Tokel's O is the one you need to use unless you need access to the balloon network for creating mud runes or dust runes. Yeah. So.
Using the third option on the Tokel's O will get you right up to a bank next to Jad, and also right up to the fairy rings.
That's right.
So that's really good.
Yep. You know, that's for anyone out there, just a little tip on runecrafting efficiently with this. The loadout system is one thing. and then the action bar is another, combined with this ring. And what you do is you set up your mouse using, you know, the Logitech software, the Razer software, if you have one of those button, one of those mice with 12 buttons on it, or even just a mouse with extra buttons on the side. You bind them to, say, number 3 and number 4, so that when you press the first one, you activate your ring, and then after that, you just press a key on your keyboard and you teleport, and then basically you can have it so that my left hand was controlling the top numbers, like to access my loadouts and whatnot, 1, 2, and 3. But then my mouse was used for activating the ring and moving around the map. So basically my hand stayed in place, and then all I did was move my map. And this created a really efficient way of runecrafting by binding those numbers to the mouse. So I would recommend anyone who has a mouse that can do that, who is doing runecrafting, take a look at that. And yeah, of course, this is not dealing with macros.
Yeah, I still remember the pains of runecrafting before. It was just the fill all and empty all from the bank.
Yep, and I mean, that also improved it a lot. So lots of great changes to runecrafting here. And I would actually like to take this moment to just show a little graph of why nature runecrafting is so profitable today. Let me just pull up the graph for this. Nature runes currently 442 GP.
Yeah.
Now, if we go back 3,091 days to when we started tracking, this is an all-time high for nature runes, believe it or not. The previous high was 364 back in 2014. Prior to that, we saw 327 in 2009, and then nothing as high as this. So really quite amazing to see nature runes at this price.
Is there anything recent that might correlate to such a big rise?
Yes, there is. And basically what this is dealing with is the fact that – you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of alluded to in the Dev Diary video. But you might not have caught it if you didn't know what you were looking for. The Rune Two-Hander is a weapon that has a higher high alc value than it should. So there's lots of free-to-play people training magic and lots of people training smithing with Rune Two-Handers that are alchemizing these. And as a result, that's causing a shortage of nature runes in the market. So that's why nature runes have spiked up so much. So if you're a runecrafter, good time to get in on those nature runes.
Yeah. I'm surprised that it's Rune Two-Handers, because this isn't the first item that got a higher high elk value than GE value.
Yeah.
I used to look at those tables back when I was going for 99 magic. And there were plenty of items that were just down there. And I also remember when it was a really big concern about the Abyssal Whip.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, just for reference, back in 2009, Pure Essence was 223 GP each. Today we're down to 28. So.
Wow.
Anyways, that's just a little bit of economics of the current state of the RS economy. Speaking of smithing and Rune Two-Handers, we do have episode 2 of the Dev Diary for the mining and smithing rework. This one is focused on tiering and how the tiers are going to work based on player feedback from the first video.
So, and Mod Osborne is much more modest this time around.
You know, you were the only one to notice that in the last video that I showed this to. So, but anyways,
it was just weird. It was really weird to me.
Okay, so what was the first thing you noticed in this video?
The first thing I noticed in this video. It was the same two people, and they were clothed appropriately.
Okay, and I knew that was going to be a big issue for you, but how about content-wise?
Content-wise, it was almost like They rehashed a little bit of what they said before, and then it almost seemed like they addressed exactly what we had talked about.
Yeah, exactly.
About bosses giving a reason for the 90 tier stuff, and how that won't affect combat or skilling, so they can equalize out.
Yeah, build and I think they got a good way.
Which is extremely smart.
I think they got a really good way of dealing with that. And, you know, I think that the design that they have, you know, in front of the Combat Council right now and promoted by this video is the way to go. And I know me and a lot of other people have been championing this for a long time. So I just want to get into it with some of the core bullet points from this video. So they just went back to last week's video for just a smidgen, and they said the results are overwhelmingly in favor for an overload type mechanic that we talked about last week, rather than, you know, the other option. So I think the overload mechanic is the way to go, and it says a lot that the other option really isn't being talked about much anymore.
Yeah. The thing is, though, they are desperately asking for suggestions, because and I don't blame them. I honestly cannot think of something that they could do besides, you know, make degradable hammers or some stuff like that.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
Yeah. And, I mean, they didn't really give too much foreshadowing of what that item will be, but they basically said that it will be something that is consumable and it will likely relate to combat rather than skilling. So that, you know, might be able to be swayed, but we'll have to wait and see. And, you know, it's interesting that people chose this over something that could generate GP, which, you know, most people think, oh, let's have more GP in the game. But I think if you put your critical thinking hat on, you'll see that there are lots and lots of ways to get GP in the game. So
yeah, and I also think that people love Herbler's Overload so much that this is just a fantastic that was just a fantastic update, and they'd like to see it in other skills.
Yeah, totally.
When it really comes down to it, there is true meaning to have a high Herbler level, and people want to see true meaning for every skill.
Yes. So they also said that in addition to this consumable high-level smithing item, tiers 60, 70, and 80, following from, you know, moving rune down to 50 and all the other ones accordingly, that is definitely still going to happen. But tiers 60, 70, and 80 will thematically correlate to the content that's in-game already. So, you know, the dragon tier, the barrows tier, and, of course, the next gear, which is great. So that's out of the way. Then the question comes to tier 90 smith gear and saying, okay, so if we put tier 90 smith gear in the game that's as good as combat gear, then the entire idea of having combat gear that comes from NPCs is shot at tier 90, so there's no point in doing that. But at the same time, if we really don't encourage people to use this smith gear, then people aren't really going to see a point to smithing at level 90 plus, which is in the same boat we're at now. So that, combined with the fact that from the previous design where they said level 83 tank gear requiring a level 90 to smith, that wasn't received well with players. And the players asked on that case, what's the point? So basically this led Jagex to come up with a third way. And this third way is what I have been championing for a long time with regards to the combat system and fixing mining and smithing. So here it is, exactly as we had kind of hoped it would be. So, you know, you're going to have to combine smithing and combat together to get the best gear in game. That's what they're going after. The Combat Council is happy with doing that, and the mining and smithing team is happy with doing that. New combat drops would require smithing to work, so you need a high-level smithing as well. And the new smithing armor would require something from combat to be made functional. And they really like the way that this is looking. They would love to do it this way, but they can't 100% promise with anything out there that it'll actually happen. So this is the way they're looking at going. It's not 100% certain, but it is a positive direction. So that was the big takeaway from this video. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that this is probably the best way to do it. And if this comes into game exactly as described here, I could not be happier.
Yeah, I don't think I could be either. I think everything they said in this dev diary was music to my ears. So
yeah,
I'm really happy.
And I mean, when you think about it, what was the first thing back in the olden days? I don't know if you were around back then, but really olden days when you needed armor from someone, who you didn't go check a Grand Exchange because that didn't exist. If you had money, you might have went to, you know, World 2 Falador and bought something. But if you didn't have those, where was the first place you went?
Bob's, no, armor. Probably the shops in game.
Yeah, but I mean, if you wanted something specific that the shops didn't sell and needed to be made by players, you would go to the players because it wasn't dropped. So in my view, this is putting us back to a very true skilling combat linkage as we had in the early days of RS. And this is going to be excellent for the health of combat and for the health of the skill in question, smithing here, should it come into game like this. So I have zero complaints at all about this and would absolutely love if it made its way into the game like this.
Yeah, no complaints either. I do wish that they had talked a little bit more about mining. I know that smithing is a much bigger portion of this rework, but maybe they'll get into that with the next episode.
Yeah, and the next week's episode is about profit. So, I mean, I imagine you'll have something in there for mining ore for profit or smithing for profit or something along the lines of that. So that would definitely be something we could hopefully hear them touch on. Other things I'd like to see them touch on the mining one, the mining shafts that were proposed in the first incarnation of the update, I would love to know if those are going forward, because when you think about it, that is in essence what dungeoneering could have been on the surface world. So if they could do something like that and maybe even incorporate some dungeoneering into it, that might be interesting.
They should do that. I don't want JX to keep their minds locked on Daemonheim being the only thing dungeoneering does.
Yeah, because, and I mean, that is why people like myself call dungeoneering a minigame, because there's nothing outside of Daemonheim, aside from the sinkholes, that really bring it into the game. So, and the question Jagex asked everyone at the end of this video was, if you have any concept for consumable or top-end smithing items north of 90, they would like your suggestions in this week's video. So if you have any ideas of what the overload-like item could do, send that along. If you have any ideas for, you know, gear that could come from 90-plus smithing that would be linked to PVM, send that along. So they really would like their comment about that. And, you know, you can comment on the forums or you can use the hashtag DevDiaries on Twitter. You have any ideas?
No. Like I said before, this is a tough one. It could be anything, and my mind is stuck on extremes and the overload. I'm thinking of something that's just consumable and would, like, boost your stats, but how useful is that if you're just doing it to make an item for profit? I just don't know.
Well, it likely would be untradeable, so I don't know if it would be, you could say profit. But
well, I mean, you'd use that item in order to do something with smithing to generate that profit.
Yeah. You know, I don't think they can do much in regards to stats, because if you look at the slate of overload potions we have now and the combination potions, oh boy, that is the ultimate in terms of power creep, in terms of, you know, giving huge amounts of stats. So I don't think it'll be anything like that. If anything, I think it might be more enhancing on the defensive side, perhaps. Like, maybe enhance your armor for a bit. Who knows?
Oh, ooh, I got one. It could be one time or degradable uses for additional effects on your armor.
There you go. And then combine that with invention next year. And invention really becomes interesting, doesn't it?
Brainstorming session.
Yeah. So there's that. Also, I think one thing I would like to see about this would be a way of adding in special attacks to the items that are not below, I mean, that are below level 90, because, you know, the Telos items from the God Wars, those already have special attacks on them. But what if you could smith something at 90 plus that involved a drop from combat, like the rare ore they suggested, for example, that gave your Drygors a special attack? Or gave.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah. And I mean, they could certainly fit that in because they kind of have a blueprint now of how to do special attacks at the high tiers with the tier 92 special attacks, right? So
Yeah.
with that blueprint, they could say, okay, so this is what a special attack should look like at high score or at high levels. Let's make sure that it's not obscenely overpowered. That's number two. Or idea number one from me. Idea number two that I had goes back to the God Swords things. And what if you could, you know, take a sliver of the power that you get from the God Wars 2 creatures and imbue other weapons with that and bring them up, not to tier 92, not to, you know, displace the items you get from God Wars 2, but what if you could bring them up to, you know, tier 88 or tier 90 with that? And then this God Wars 2 stuff, you know, has a huge impact on the game, much like the original God Wars did on combat back in the day. So those are my two ideas of how we could utilize smithing past level 90. And I mean, obviously, I don't think that they're too overpowered, but they are kind of up there. And they do, rather than, you know, creating new gear, they do rely on enhancing old gear. Or an alternative could be is that you just smith, you know, like a level 90 version of a God Sword. Well, you couldn't call it a God Sword, obviously, but it would be a level 90 sword from the God Wars dungeon that would use those same rare components that come from God Wars Dungeon 2. So that's some of the stuff that I was bouncing around in my head. But when I watched this video, it really made me feel good that they are on this path. So I feel good about where we're going with smithing at the high tiers now. We'll have to see about mining, but I assume it'll be roughly the same.
I am those ideas that you came up with really got me excited for this.
Yeah, especially
I
the
would,
invention one.
yeah, the invention one, just the fact that you could maybe put an ability onto your weapon, would make it so feel like your own so much, and it'd be just so cool. I'm just dreaming up combinations
Yeah,
in
and
my
I
head
mean,
right
it
now.
would effectively involve smithing, invention, and combat. Because you would need to get the drop from combat, you would need to have level 90 plus smithing to put the or create the thing with the smithing skill, and then you would need to use invention to imbue it somehow. So, yeah.
Invention, which also means you need X amount divination.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, this is kind of, I think, what a lot of people thought about when invention came out and they were talking about leveling up your own gear. I think there was a segment of the population that was perhaps disappointed with how leveling up your gear went because the perks didn't really turn out to be as great as people thought they would be. So this might be the second kick at the can for invention to, you know, really bring it up to the next level and make it a truly end game component.
I
So,
think if they did that, the consistency would just be perfect.
yeah. Definitely. And I mean, I say this, and there's nothing wrong with the perks the way they are. Like, I mean, there's great perks like the Enlightened perk and whatnot, for example, to give you more item XP, or the perk that allows you to do some additional damage along the way. But I don't think that's what the people had in mind when they were thinking of invention. At least that's not what I had in mind. So that's where that idea comes from. All right, so you can watch that video on the RuneScape website. Link is in the show notes at update.rcbnb.com. Chat with them on the official forums and on Twitter using the hashtag DevDiaries. There's also one place else you could chat with them, but I'm not going to mention that. So, November Solomon store deals are here. So, some interesting ones this month. Nothing too outrageous in terms of having to spend a lot for them. Mostly small sales this month. The members' free item is the Flameheart Armor Override. If you don't have that already and want to pick that up, you can in Solomon's store. Some other items going on sale this month include Captain Blackbeard's hairstyle, the Crystalline Wings, Cursed Reaver outfit, Flaming Lash, Caridian Music Box, Masterwork Music Box, Robes of Remembrance, the Strongarm Mining Animation, and the Zamorak Wings. That's in the Solomon's General Store. Now moving over to the Loyalty Shop, Countess Title, Crab Dance Transformation Emote, Legendary Enrichment Aura. That might be one to pick up if you're at all doing Dungeoneering.
Yeah, that's the one that stands
Divination.
Out the most to me.
Divination.
Yep.
Mystical Gaze effect. The Beautiful and the Handsome title. The Beautiful Mr. Bistro. No comment on that?
No.
Vernal Gaze. Warrior title and the Zen Pet. All right. So
they need to add some more loyalty point items.
Yeah, I mean, we got loyalty points coming out of our ears, right?
Yeah, I there's so many I've got that I don't even really care to spend in case they do add in the future.
Yeah, and I mean, auras, I think, is where everyone's at, and that's what they always go for.
I think I've depleted the amount of auras that I can actually purchase.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right. So, I have a bit of a story about the Solomon's General Store this past week. Okay, so in the October Solomon's Store sale, the Sky Pouncer pet was for sale. And me, you know, never having bought or used a legendary pet, was under the impression that I did not have a legendary pet. So I waited for the Sky Pouncer to go on sale. 50% off. Good deal. And I ended up purchasing 3 bonds to purchase this pet. Then I opened the pet interface to look at it. And oh, what do we have here? There's a fully grown adult blood pouncer in my pet interface. As it turns out, in October 2013, they give Premier Club members that year the blood pouncer pet. And I seemingly forgot about this or missed the note. So, I have two legendary pets that I will never be using one of them. And I spent 3 bonds, roughly, you know, however much that is, on GP in order to get this pet. So, some money went down the toilet there. So, I guess just a bit of a warning out there to everyone. If you are planning on purchasing something of this variety, check if you already have it in your pet interface.
All right.
Yeah, I should have looked that up, but I just assumed I never had one. So,
well, don't feel bad, because if you have one, that means I have it, and I didn't know either.
Yeah. And this was for Premier Club in 2013, the only year I got Premier Club. So, those of you guys out there who do have Premier Club, then perhaps you are missing out as well. So, anyways, this week's Treasure Hunter update. Celebration of Fire. You get to set off some fireworks in RuneScape and get some bonuses for the fire making skill this week on Treasure Hunter this weekend.
This is really cool, actually.
Yeah, I believe it's the annual Guy Fawkes kind of celebration, if I recall. Mm-hmm. That's about this time of year. Like if you go to the crater, for example, you can set fireworks off. And there's a huge bonfire there, which you can use for some boost, even if you don't have the Treasure Hunter component. So it's a great weekend to train fire making. You get plus 25% fire making XP. The same fire making XP boost has braziers for cremation, though no prayer XP boost. It always acts as if 5 people are around the bonfire, even if it's not. And there's a chance to save logs, protein included, when burning. So that is something that you can do this weekend if you're looking to train fire making. But you can also get items off of Treasure Hunter or by talking to Sarah, Emmett, Chad, and Evie in the Lumbridge Crater. And these will give you free experience in the skills that we're talking about here, including fire making, summoning, and construction. So with my free items I got here, I got, you know, roughly, I believe, about 12,000 firemaking XP and a little bit less in terms of summoning and construction because I have a lower construction level. So definitely a chance to get some great XP here. And I would imagine that we'll be seeing huge XP gains in firemaking, summoning, and construction this weekend via Treasure Hunter. So...
It just brings me back to that one quest with Char. I forgot what it was called. I kind of really liked the fire making theme of that. And this, you're using the fire sticks and breathing fire again. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's right. You know, those of you guys who listened to the show back in the Brad Woodward days might remember a story he told once where they were doing their Guy Fawkes celebration. And, you know, rather than, they set off their fireworks, but, one of them went off course and, hit the neighbor's clothesline and started that on fire. And then rather than owning that problem, they all ran inside and, just didn't want to get blamed for some kind of hate crime or anything like that. So I remember hearing that story around this time of year at some point on the podcast. I don't know if any of you listeners out there remember that, but it happened. So, all right. I believe that's it for RS updates this week. Anything else you'd like to mention?
No, I think we've got it all covered.
All right. And it's also worth noting that if you're not using NXT for this event, you are missing out in terms of how it looks because the improved lighting in NXT makes this entire area just look astounding.
It does look really cool. And I wonder if the skyboxes are a little bit different just over Lumbridge Crater for this.
Yeah, I think they are. I think they got enhanced because, I mean, you can even see a different glow on the Wizard's Tower than you normally can with this. And that's new. So, really well done graphically for this. And, I mean, I guess it's a testament to the fact that the client is able to handle such things like that now.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the questions right now. First one is an audio question from Parnassius.
G'day, Shane and Mr. Bistro. Parnassius here with a question for you. Having almost completed the arc with just a few seeds and message in bottles to find, I find that I have no real inclination or reason to return there once I have unlocked those final bits of content. My question to you guys is, do you think for most players the XP offered there is enough to keep them going back, or should there be some additional content that makes Chimes worthwhile once everything is unlocked? Just things that where they can do upgrades or, you know, have degradable items that need Chimes to recharge. I hate that the Chimes are spent on XP lamps. To me, that just cheapens the skill. I want proper content that I can enjoy and earn my rewards from. How do you guys feel about it? Secondly, this one is for Mr. Bistro. You said last week you were going to stockpile your Rotomatics for invention and do them all at once to jump a few levels. Just wanted to warn you that this will affect the inspiration you gain. By skipping levels, you slow down the rate of inspiration you get. So do be careful, otherwise you may find you reach 120 and can't unlock everything. And finally, this one is for Shane. Two boy scouts are in a fire-making competition. The scout leader comes over to them and hands the first boy two sticks to rub together to start his fire. He turns to the second one and holds out the sticks for him too. The child shakes his head and says, "No thank you, I have my Samsung Note 7. And on that note, happy RuneScaping to all, and see you all in-game. Bye for now.
As I stated, this was not in the show notes by myself. It was brought up by a listener.
Well, yeah, it got mentioned one more time. thank you, Parnassius.
I enjoyed that, Parnassius. Thank you so much.
I'll jump in and cover your concern for my invention training. I understand that I will be getting less inspiration. But at level 96 to 99, you're not unlocking any new items to go ahead and create at the bench. So there isn't really a need to get that inspiration, and the inspiration will come with time after the 99. So it really wouldn't matter either way. From what I've come to find. However, I am actually going to go ahead and start using my Routomatics as I get them, but by the level and not so much all at once. And that's mostly just so I know that I don't have to go and make one more before I get to 99, so I can keep them all in one place.
All right. Fair enough. And, you know, I definitely, you know, agree with Parnassius said, I think that you should just use them as you get them. But I mean, you're given the chance to, you know, stock up, and I understand where you're coming from with that. But I mean, it also is the amount of inspiration. Do you think you would have enough inspiration if you only did that at 99, then carried on after to do the rest normally?
I believe so.
All right.
I could be wrong. I have no idea what's in store for me at 120, but that's the joy of the game. And honestly, I think I would get much more enjoyment out of getting a massive blast of experience multiple times instead of just getting the incremental values of a little over 400K for the Rotomatics after each completion.
All right. Fair enough. And are you you're disassembling those?
Yep, I'm disassembling
them. Level 10.
What's up?
At level 10.
At level 10, and then I'm adding those gizmos right onto the next rod in my inventory and continuing onward.
All right. So arc wise, you know, very interesting question about, you know, when you complete the arc, what point is there to go back aside from chime collecting? Should, you know, the skull come out next year or following year for that? And, you know, the reason I say the following year for that is because I was chatting with these folks in clan chat about this, and, you know, maybe it was the question that should we see the next set of islands in the arc next year, or should we see a standard ports update? And I think we should wait until 2018 to see the next set of islands come out with the arc. And that leads right into what Parnassius was saying, that aside from gathering chimes, there's really no reason to go back to the arc after you've completed everything, unless you got, you know, some dream island to get your XP on it. So, you know, I hadn't thought of this question before, but it's a great question to ask, and it'll be interesting to see what Jagex does in the next couple months to try and encourage people to stick around the arc. What's your thinking on this?
I think that Jagex needs to bite the bullet a little bit, and I know that they're separate economies, but if people were to take more and more stuff out of the arc that do require a recharge of items from the arc, that would give perfect incentive to go to and from. And maybe not just chimes, but other resources there as well, which could really just diversify where they're all going.
Yeah. And, I mean, I totally understand why they did the split economy like that. It effectively gave everyone a fresh starting point, right? And I think that that is something that a lot of people really enjoyed about starting RS off fresh, was that you have this, you know, economy that no one is really involved in, that you could basically make it your own. So I understand that. And as for, you know, whether or not people should go back, I think they definitely have to keep going back to the arc, because if they don't, then that's dead content, and you don't want a game with dead content. Not for the reason of, you know, people not doing it at the start, but for the fact that people have blasted through it so quickly from the very beginning that it doesn't really matter. So, you know, I don't think adding items that you buy for chimes that you can take out of the arc is the right answer. That effectively defeats the initial design of this. So I don't actually have an answer for what they could do in this case, because if they were to, you know, add something that you could buy with chimes on Waiko and then take it back to the mainland, that would be effectively as bad as adding, you know, the Prifedana's waterfall fishing to Prif after that design document was finalized. So, I think that the best way for them to deal with this, if I was in charge of coming up with a solution to keep bringing people back, would be perhaps after completing everything, you get another series of progressive reductions on the cost of supplies for doing the Uncharted Isle runs. I mean, it can already go pretty low as it is. I don't know if it needs to go lower, but perhaps that might be something worth looking at to see if the Uncharted Isle visits stop in people who have completed the arc. If they are stopped, then yeah, lower the price a bit more. But if they are still relatively constant going on, then no, the price shouldn't be lowered. Then on the Uncharted Isles, I would actually look at making it very much like Menafos is going to be. It's going to be, you know, those small, tiny, random contained skilling encounters that give great XP, mm-hmm. and then they time out after a certain amount of time, and you can only do them once daily. And, you know, maybe they could even add ones that appear weekly, for example, that you can do once a week or once a month, perhaps, just like, you know, the standard distractions and diversions. And then you could have one daily island that you can go back to, as we have now, and you could have a weekly island and a monthly island, and the rewards for those would be progressively different, and there would be reason to keep trying to discover these, because as you increase the amount of time it takes to find these islands, you're going to do less. Like, if you can only do one per week of the monthly islands trying to find them, then it's going to take, you know, you're only going to get a chance to look at four per month, right? So basically what I'm saying is that you make the islands rarer and you add on different tiers of islands that you can go back to. And that, I think that would definitely keep people looking at the arc in terms of source of content that they can keep revisiting, even if they've completed it. So that's my answer, tiered islands. Anything else on that, or are we good to move on?
No, I think you covered it. I think the, degradable things is really what's going to bring people to and from. So that's a really important feature,
right,
that needs to be expanded on.
But if you do that, does that take away from ports too much?
No, I don't think it would.
Why not?
Because I think that you should be able to recharge it like from the source, and maybe it's cheaper to do it from the arc versus ports, and ports would have something new coming out.
Okay.
Or
so basically what you're saying is have the arc be a cheaper source of recharging your port stuff.
Mm-hmm. But you still have to get that stuff through ports.
Okay, that's fair. All right, that's another perfectly good solution, I think. Pretty good.
Yeah.
Good job. So I guess I guess there's two solutions right there to keep people coming back to the Ark. Tiered islands, ones you can visit monthly, weekly, in addition to the daily ones, and increase the rarity of those. And as you said, increase the amount of materials you get from the Ark, allowing you to recharge cheaply the stuff that you get from ports. And, you know, on this note, I think that if, I don't know if it is, maybe someone out there can enlighten me on this, because I still haven't done too much exploring, because I'm still missing some of the levels for it. But I don't know, but you know those Death Lotus darts at level 85 from player-owned ports? Those are expensive to make, and I think if you could make those Death Lotus darts from player-owned ports a lot cheaper through the arc, I think that might be a very interesting change in the way we train ranged. Because, I mean, you have these darts, but no one wants to effectively be throwing them away, right? So
yeah.
That's another thing that really irked me when I saw player-owned ports. It's like, okay, we got this excellent tier 85 ranged weapon, but it's a dart, And when I throw these darts, some of them are going to disappear, and I'm spending huge amounts of money on this when I can run a oh boy. There's the RuneScape Dementia. What's the bow you get from the Queen Black Dragon called? The Royal Crossbow. When you can run a Royal Crossbow for practically nothing. It's like there's no point in using the Death Lotus darts when you can run the Royal Crossbow for nothing. So that's something I'd like to see from the arc, thinking about it, after you've completed everything. Cheaper ways of getting those Death Lotus darts, whether it be through ports reduction or maybe even finding them on the arc somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
That might be interesting. All right. Thank you, Parnassius. Another stimulating, thought-provoking question there.
Oh, thank you.
So this next one is from Thieves. He says, hey, guys, random question off the start. Invention daily challenges. Any news on those? What would you guys deem as an appropriate daily for the skill? And questy questions, with Children of Ma coming soon, I thought I'd ask for a few early predictions from you guys. Do you think we'll see Zamorak's betrayal of Zaros verbatim? Or do you think Jagex will throw in a twist in there to dissuade players away from the Empty Lord, similar to how they did during the Within the Light, or the Light Within, rather, cutscene? That's my mistake. And death predictions. Who, if anyone, would you put money on snuffing it during the quest? Cheers, fellas. All right, you heard anything on Invention Daily Challenges? You know, I haven't heard anything on those since they were talking about bringing in XP.
Yeah, so, I think that would be an early next year kind of update.
Yeah, and you know, it could go with the achievement system.
I honestly would see an appropriate daily being disassembling a certain amount of items.
Yeah, that could be one. Or reaching a certain level in a piece of equipment. I mean, obviously higher levels. I think you could probably get to level 7 or 8 reasonably in a day. Maybe 5. I think that could be another daily that you could do with that. But the thing they have to really be careful about with the Invention Daily Challenges, whenever those arrive, is that they need to remember that there's the Invention Tech Trees, which do already give you daily challenges if you're working on those. So there needs to be enough distinction between the Tech Tree challenges and the daily challenges to make sure that they're not competing with each other and not too confusing. So that's something that needs to be out there as well.
I think the daily challenges need to be a little bit easier than the tech tree challenges.
Oh, yeah. Some of those tech tree challenges took a
while. Those aren't
really
a comp cape requirement.
Yeah. All right. So, like, disassembling or getting maybe X of a certain component then?
Yeah.
All right. And, you know, I did think that when Jagex was speaking to us at the, you know, a couple months after Invention came out, I did think that they were going to be bringing these out when the Invention skill was able to be used with bonus XP and labs, but obviously that never materialized. So that is indeed a question to look at. And I did do a quick search prior to the podcast here, and I haven't really seen or heard anything on this since the summer. So we'll have to wait and see. But there's some suggestions on that. So Children of Ma is, of course, the penultimate quest to Sliske's Endgame series. And we do know we will be witnessing in some way Zamorak's betrayal of Zaros. You know, we have had Maud Raven tell us before that there will be no time travel in quest in the future, because that's a very bad thing to do. And he got very distressed over that at RuneFest. So with that being said, I think what we're best going to see is probably some kind of either reenactment of it or a recording of it via cutscene. So it could ultimately be had a twist. It could ultimately have a twist thrown in there, as we had in the previous one. I don't think we'll see it verbatim. I don't think that's something that Jagex is going to do, because if you remember, there was the quest where we touched the Stone of Jazz, and we looked into the past with that as well. And, you know, that exactly wasn't exactly as it was back in the old days when that was happening. So I don't think it'll be exactly as it was. I mean, they could, and I think a lot of players would be happy about that. And if they're pulling out all the stops with this quest, then they might as well do that. But I'm betting on the modified cutscene in some way. And, you know, of course, I think that is something they have to do. I think they do have to dissuade people from Zaros because there's so many Zaros followers out there. It is by far the most popular. I don't know how it ended up being like that. So I just like to point out that I was the first Zaros follower before it was the cool thing to do.
Okay, hipster Shane.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was because I, you know, in the lead up to Desert Treasure, the Desert Treasure quest had done the dig site and caught some of the rumblings that were coming with this. And when we saw what happened in Desert Treasure and saw, you know, the dialogue towards this, I was immediately in there. So, and this was a long time ago, so I think I am able to claim that.
Good for you.
What about you? What are you thinking for this cutscene?
I don't know. I think the cutscene will be an image of what happened in the past. That's about it. As for twist on it, though, I think they could really do some fun twists that could either make a lot of people angry, which is what I hope, or make a lot of people
confirm their expectations, perhaps. And I mean, to be fair, we haven't been waiting for this quest for 10 years like we were waiting with Plague's End, right?
Yeah.
So it's not something that has to cater to the players and has to be exactly what the players expected. They are able to throw some things in here. So there could definitely be some dissuasion. Or maybe negative persuasion might be a better way of looking at it.
Negative persuasion.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Persuasion. Oh, Zaros. Oh.
Yeah, I don't. What is that relating to?
I don't know if I could say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. In the last quest, wasn't it where we found out that he was able to persuade just anything and everything to follow him?
Yeah.
That's why he had such a big empire.
That's right.
So that's where my little odd tangent came from.
Okie doke. How about death? Think anyone will die?
I want to say yes.
All right. Who?
I want to say Zaros will die.
I don't think so. I honestly don't think so.
I think it'd be really cool.
I mean, that would be huge, and that would certainly elevate Zamorak to a position we haven't seen before if it was at his hand. But I don't know if Jagex can do that because of the linkage that Zaros has to the Elder Gods and the fact he was featured in next year's Elder God concept art. Yes, I'm breaking the wall that we're not talking about lore here, but he was featured in the Elder God concept art. Though that could have been a red herring. All right. I personally believe that Zamorak is going to bite it in this quest. You want to know why?
And let me guess. It's because he's already weaker.
Well, yeah, that's one reason. But the reason coming from Jagex's side of view is that they added this huge statue, the Sword of Edicts, or whatever it's called, in Varrok Grand Exchange. And this is Sliske's scorecard of deaths. And, you know, he's leading that right now. But it was only really updated after Nomad's Requiem, which, I mean, if you're only going to use it once before the final quest, that really doesn't serve much of a purpose as a scorecard, right? So I think there's going to be some movement in that scorecard on this quest, and I don't think there'd be any bigger movement than, you know, perhaps seeing Zamorak get killed in this quest, which, I mean, well, okay. So based on what we know about Zaros, is Zaros likely to be one to kill Zamorak all these years later because of his initial betrayal?
No, but yes.
I mean, it would certainly provide for good theatrics, and that's why I could see Jagex doing it. And it would certainly, you know, amp up the final quest in the series. But with that being said, I don't think Zaros is the kind of person that would ultimately do that. And because Zaros is specifically goal-oriented in this entire thing, as we learned in The Light Within. So that's why I don't put it on him doing that, but maybe someone else doing that. It would have to be someone stronger than him. So we'll have to wait and see with that. But yeah, I definitely think that something will happen to Zamorak, either be taken down another peg or ultimately extinguished. So there's that. But in addition to that, I do think there will be more movement on the scorecard after this quest. So yeah, thank you, Thebes.
Thank you.
Yeah, what was that sword called in Sliske's scorecard? Or something along that line of that. Because, I mean, Sliske's scoreboard. Because you don't add that in and only use it once, if you get what I'm saying, right? So that's why I don't think it's going to be just, you know, a standard quest with some lore in it.
Well, maybe Jagex had more intentions for this story, but they realized that they needed to wrap it up because they had other ambitions.
Well, no, I mean, it was always built as, you know, finishing this year. So I think that they are fulfilling it to the arc that they wanted. And when you look at the scorecard right now, Zamorak is second from the bottom, only above Marimbo. Brassica Prime is even higher than Zamorak. Zaros and Saren right now are purely at zero. And of course, that's because they haven't done anything yet. So I would, you know, not preclude them from doing anything this quest, though I don't see how that would fit in. So, I mean, who knows, really? But I definitely think there will be movement, and Zamorak could be moving to the dead column. All right. So if you guys want to send us questions, you can do that in a number of ways. The first way is, of course, to email them to questions@rsbnb.com in text or audio format. You can also leave us a voicemail on the Google Voice number, which is 571-57-BNB, or better remembered as 571-572-2632. And we also take direct messages on Twitter at rsbnb. All right, so you ready for tech news?
Bring on the tech news.
And, of course, there will be no talk of exploding phones in this tech news because Parnassius has already provided our comic relief for the day.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Parnassius, once again. Anyways, tech news this week. LastPass. Do you use LastPass?
Oh, I love my LastPass.
Yeah, so LastPass is a password manager that is free to use. And basically what happens is you give it a master password, and then LastPass will manage all of your other passwords for you so that it ensures that you have good, strong passwords for all the websites that you use. And you might be asking, okay, well, how is this secure? Well, LastPass has been audited by numerous security authorities before, and the general consensus is that if you were going to create a password manager, you would want to do it in the way LastPass did. So that's pretty high praise for LastPass. So LastPass is an industry standard, I want to say, for password managers if you want an online solution. So You get it at LastPass.com, but this week they made some big news in how they handle their premium product. So this week, they announced that you can use LastPass on any device, anywhere, for free. Previously, you were only able to use it on one device and not have the syncing. That was a part of their premium membership. So now you can use it on your browser, your tablet, your phone, all of that for free. And this really is something I think that is a great thing for them to do, because it underscores how important good, strong passwords are on today's internet. Because, I mean, If you have one password and use it everywhere, and that password gets discovered, well, you're kind of in trouble. But if you have a good, strong password, i.e., you know, 10 to 18 characters for all your websites with upper, lowercase characters and symbols, that becomes pretty hard to crack. And LastPass can manage these for you in a safe and secure way.
Yeah. They also have two-step authentication methods, such as the Yubico keys and Google's authenticator. Even some of the stuff that's built into Android that you're able to manage in there to make sure that even if someone were to manage to get your LastPass master password, they would still need that second step of authentication that you carry with you.
Yeah. And I mean, the second factor is good, and it really makes for a bulletproof solution. And I can't think of right now any better way of handling that. So LastPass is truly an industry leader on this, and it is saying something when they make this available for free. And, you know, I think that the number one reason people don't do this is because they're set in their ways and they have set specific passwords that they like to use, but they don't understand that logging into a website becomes as simple as clicking one button after you adopt LastPass, right?
Mm-hmm.
So... I mean, with this being free, it effectively means that there's no reason for anyone who doesn't want it to have a free password manager. So, you know, and this is the reason at the very beginning here, the fact that, you know, you needed the premium account for this. That's why I went with the OS X based solution, 1Password rather than LastPass, because this wasn't free back then. So, definitely happy to see this. And if you're not already using LastPass, I would highly recommend that you give it a look. You can find it at lastpass.com. It's been a pick of the week, I believe, numerous times before on the podcast. So
it's really great.
Yeah. And I mean, even if you wanted to, you could get a premium still for LastPass, enabling you to have, you know, online storage of a gigabyte of encrypted data. So, and I mean, it's not even that expensive. It's $1 a month or $12 a year. And this $1 a month or $12 per year gets you family sharing for up to 5 users. As you said, the YubiKey access, which is basically a physical multi-factor authentication device. Mm-hmm. Priority text support, LastPass for applications, desktop fingerprint identification, and 1 gigabyte of encrypted file storage. That's if you pay $12 a year. But for free, you get access on all your devices, phones, tablets, computers, you name it. Save and fill your passwords, a password generator, secure notes, share passwords and notes, security challenge, and 2-factor authentication. So, yeah. Highly recommend LastPass, available on the App Store, Google Play, and the Windows Store as well.
Yeah, and LastPass, you can also do this really cool thing where you can restrict where you're allowed to log in. So you can knock off countries like China and Russia.
So if you know your ISP says you're from Canada all the time, you could say, don't let me log in from Canada. Right. And, you know, that's really a great thing, too, because I had this old Yahoo account. And, I mean, we've talked about Yahoo being in the news and whatnot before, about them having massive security breaches and whatnot. But a couple weeks ago, I got an email saying that someone had attempted to log into this Yahoo account from Egypt. And this is the kind of thing that would be prevented with LastPass. So, pretty good. And... great for them to do this for internet health and security. All right. This next one relates to Google and Microsoft undergoing and something a little bit controversial here. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
So Microsoft patches its operating system the second Tuesday of each month. That's the Patch Tuesday, and that this November will be November 8th. But as it turns out, Google notified Microsoft about a serious vulnerability in Windows on October 21st. And since Microsoft didn't patch it 10 days after that, Google made this publicly available, the knowledge of this exploit available on October 31st. And they said, okay, it's already being actively exploited in the wild. And, you know, there's no reason why this shouldn't be patched. So it's Google's policy to let people know 10 days after they release a vulnerability out into the wild. Basically, this vulnerability allows for remote execution in Windows. Google, of course, being, you know, I want to say, it seems like they're kind of on a high horse here because they say that they published Chrome and they patched Flash already, so we're going to put this out there if you're using Chrome, but if you're using anything else on Windows, you're at risk.
Yeah, I don't know what anyone else can really say, though. Google is basically the gatekeeper of the internet, and so much SEO and just everything trickles to Google. Even when you're using search engines like Bing, Yahoo, and all these, it still comes down to Google for a lot of what people have to do. So I don't know what anyone can do about Google releasing this stuff.
Yeah,
I think they're in the wrong.
That's the problem. Yeah, they definitely are in the wrong because I don't see this as doing a public service to anyone. This is creating a bigger vulnerability and a bigger target than needs to be. Because as it is right now, if you can find something like this, maybe it's being talked about somewhere shady, you could potentially utilize this. But now Google making this public means everyone out there is going to see it. And the part that really gets me is that Chrome and Flash are already patched. Would they have done the same thing if Chrome and Flash weren't patched? That's a good question to ask. And that's what really bothers me about this. Like, it's 2016. Zero-day vulnerabilities have been happening for 20 years. There should be a way of guaranteeing that a big company like Google is not going to be painting a target on someone else's back. Like, this just seems really scummy to me, and I honestly can't believe that Google would do this.
You'd be surprised what scummy stuff Google does. They have the fix your shit mentality.
For a lot of things. I'm getting ready to complain about that next year when they label the RSBNB forms as insecure since we're not using a security certificate on them and we ask for a password. Just because we don't have a certificate and we're asking for a password does not make our site insecure. And it's going to put a little red exclamation mark in the address bar, which is downright frightening. I don't know. I'm honestly losing my patience with Google here. I mean, I have things going to my spam box in Gmail that shouldn't be going to spam. I have my new tab page in Google Chrome being used to promote various causes that Google is championing for. I mean, they might be internet related one day, they might be about the environment another day, and then the next day they might be about saving gorillas. I don't know, but I don't know. This Google is really starting to bother me, and this really, I mean, it just feels really scummy, and it's not making me feel good about them as, you know, gatekeepers of the internet, as you say, because if they are gatekeepers of the internet, it feels as though like they're trying to create their own internet where they are the ones in control of everything. In fact, also in control of who gets painted as a target. In this case, it was Microsoft. So this is just a bit of a warning. And of course, this will be patched on November 8th. And Microsoft's statement for this said, "We believe in coordinated vulnerability disclosure, and today's disclosure by Google puts customers at potential risk. Windows is the only platform with a customer commitment to investigate reported security issues and proactively update impacted devices as soon as possible. We recommend customers use Windows 10 and the Microsoft Edge browser for the best protection."
Of course they do.
Yeah, and I mean, Edge will be safe once this is out there, but right now it's a huge target. If someone wanted to set something up, that would attack Edge and anything else on Windows. So, I don't know. I'm having doubts about Google these days.
Yeah. Since I started working as a web developer, Google has been painted in a little bit more of a different light.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that I like about him, yep. But geez.
Yeah, totally agree with you. All right. Final piece of tech news relates to Apple's MacBook Pros that we talked about last week. According to Apple's marketing chief, Phil Schiller, this version of MacBook Pro has had more online orders than any of the other previous generations in their first week. So this is really saying something for what people think of this new MacBook Pro. And I think if you look at the device from an interaction perspective, it really shows where the industry should be going in the next 5 years. Just as, you know, when the first MacBook Air came out, that kind of set the trend for where notebooks were going to go after that. I think this is kind of setting the trend of how touch is going to work on laptops that aren't the Surface and aren't tablets. So just the fact there's been this huge adoption rate for it speaks volumes to what people are thinking about it. So I'm really
happy.
And
it also helps that there is a pretty long drought between releases of the Pro.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, they also adopted open standards like USB-C for their connections this time for the cables, which is good because once USB-C becomes popular, you're going to be able to get USB-C cables for relatively low cost. So, but yeah, that just comes from Apple this week. But more orders for this MacBook Pro than any other MacBook Pro before in the first week. That's a lot. All right. I believe that's a good segue to other things. What do you think?
I think so.
Okay. And the first thing that we'll be talking about is, of course, the Informa Roundup for November. But the reason I say it's a good segue for other things is because my Informa article this month talked about this new MacBook Pro and specifically how it relates to the future of computing. I basically go on to say that this MacBook Pro is telling the notebook market and desktop market in general how they can adopt touch without going full touchscreen. Because if you think about it, using a touchscreen at your desktop really doesn't make sense ergonomically, right? Mm-hmm. So, and unless you're using a tablet, it really doesn't make sense on a laptop to be touching your screen in that same fashion. So I think Apple has the best formula here for taking touch forward with this, and I go through some of the reasons behind it and why it's going to be a success based on the previous attempts Apple made at touch on their computers, including, of course, you know, the huge Magic Trackpad in all the laptops and the fact you can get that now, and the fact that everyone is very familiar with touch from using smartphones. So you can give that a read at informer.rsbnb.com. We also have other articles this month, including Trick or Treat, Gamers Treated to a Spooky Sweet October by Tannis, where he goes over some of October's game releases. So if you're interested in games, including Mafia 3, Civilization 6, Titanfall 2, and Battlefield 1, give that a read. And our two RuneScape Informer articles this month included Alex's analysis of the Ark Chapter 2, and Colton taking a look back at the rum deal quest and how that got the pirate quest line started. All that and more at informer.rsbnb.com. And you're probably wondering here why Mr. Bistro didn't write. Well, that's because of Bounty Hunter not arriving, but you're going to definitely do something on that.
Oh, I'm going to cover that. It's going to be great.
Excellent, excellent. And in for some reason it doesn't come out, I'm sure you'll find something equally interesting to talk about.
Yeah.
So,
but also, I really want to talk about Bounty Hunter.
Yeah, yeah, we definitely need to do that. Also, this past month in October, we had the Skill of the Month for fire making. Interesting relating to Bernassius's question there. Duke Juker got his first place win with 32 million XP gained. That's astounding. Congratulations. And then others in the top three were Flash with 17.1 and Parnassus with 12 million XP gains. So good job, everyone who competed in the October Skill of the Month.
Mm-hmm.
And our November skill of the month is agility, which let's just say has had a slower uptake compared to other skill of the months. Only 8 competitors this month, mainly, I guess, because it's agility. Parnassius currently in first place with about 1 million XP gained. Second place is Carpi with 182,000. And third place is Smalth's Fib with 57k XP gained. And you're in there too, I see, but you haven't gained any XP yet.
No. been really busy up to this point, but I do plan to be gaining some. So.
All right.
Be looking out.
Yeah, you think you're going to pull first here?
I'm going to try.
All right.
I don't think I've ever done it before, but I'll try.
Yeah, and you're not up against anyone who has like 100 million agility XP. The highest here is Small Fib with 78. So, anyways. All right. We do have 2 achievements of the week this week. Mandy got 120 farming on November 1st, and Tyler got 120 dungeoneering on October 27th. So congratulations to the both of you on your level 120s. I also saw earlier online, I'm not supposed to mention it because it's not part of this week per se, but Touchpad Pro also got 120 invention today on the 3rd of November. So,
congrats, everyone.
You're going to be getting up there soon, hey?
120 invention?
Yeah.
Soon? I don't know about soon. We'll see.
All right, fair enough. Okay, so I hijacked the Pick of the Week segment away from you this week because I felt this one needed to be used as we are approaching the U.S. election, this Pick of the Week. So this pick,
ooh boy.
Yeah, this pick of the week is a movie. It's from 2015 and it's called Truth. It features Robert Redford and it focuses on the CBS News investigation in 2004 of George W. Bush's military service and whether or not he got out of war duty in Vietnam. I don't know if you remember this, but anyone who followed the 2004 U.S. election will know that there was a good deal of controversy between him and John Kerry about who served and who did not serve in the Vietnam War. And this was brought forward by a news report from CBS 60 Minutes. And this movie actually goes through the investigative journalism that went into creating this report. And I'm not going to spoil the whole story of this movie because there is a bit of a dramatic end to it. But basically, this movie is something everybody, I think, should watch, at, especially around election time, if you're at all interested in whether or not the media out there, as in modern-day journalism, is being truthful to you or not, hence the name of the movie, Truth. Given, you know, the way coverage is going this election, I can't think of a better thing to watch before Election Day if you haven't seen this and you're following the news media reporting. And it'll definitely leave you asking some questions about the impartiality of journalists in the modern era and whether or not journalism is an industry that can actually be trusted still today. So you can probably find this on Netflix or, you know, iTunes to rent or something along the lines of that. But it's called Truth, features Robert Redford and Dennis Quaid. I won't go into the full story of it, but definitely give it a watch if you're at all following this U.S. election. I think it's something everyone can watch. So
sounds pretty good.
Yeah. I'm not normally a fan of Robert Redford, but I think he did a pretty okay job at representing Dan Rather in this movie. So, and anyone who is familiar with the real story behind this will know the ultimate ending of this movie. All right. And on that note, I actually just wanted to use this time to mention something that happened last week in the U.S. election that I think everyone needs to be aware of. And it's not necessarily related to the voting that's going to happen. It's kind of just a thing about society, if you get what I mean. So, last week there was a video that was posted of a homeless woman who was being beaten while she was attempting to protect Donald Trump's star on the Walk of Fame in Los Angeles. And that is emblematic of the problem that this entire election cycle has degraded to. I mean, ordinarily, you don't see this kind of thing in an election, and it has outright resorted to violence and destruction of property. And this is a huge order of things from, you know, lawn signs being stolen. I don't know if you've seen any lawn signs get stolen in your area or anything like that.
No.
Okay. But that's happened. There's also been the firebombing of the Republican campaign office in North Carolina, and then this video that I mentioned, which I will include in the show notes. But
how have I been missing all of this? You don't even live here.
And see, this is what I was talking about, why you should watch the movie called Truth, because none of this stuff has made it into the media. But this video was just downright horrible. And no matter the difference of opinions, everyone should ultimately have the ability to express their own opinion without fear of personal attack, I think. I think that's something we can agree on, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think anyone who's hearing this should make sure that they take what they can and ensure that they don't let anything like this ever happen. I mean, you see evidence of human compassion after natural disasters, you know, earthquakes, tsunamis, hurricanes, whatever. And then you see society denigrate to this, and it's like, okay, why does that happen? So I think anyone who sees a person advocating violence on either side should really see if they can get that to stop and point out to people what's going on here. And that's the whole reason why this video went viral on the internet. And that's that, you know, modern social media allows for anyone who has a substantial following to reach out to the public and make an impact. And with this connected world, we are able to condemn these acts of violence even better than we were like a decade ago. And like you said, you haven't heard about any of this. And mm-hmm. the mainstream media really isn't covering this. But if they had covered this in like the astounding thoroughness that they covered the Trump tapes, they're not any better than the propaganda ministry of Joseph Goebbels when you think about it. Because if they're not talking about something huge like this, where someone's being beaten for protecting something like this, then what good are they, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly why I put the pick of the week in as that movie called Truth, and why this kind of behavior should be condemned. So you can see the video at update.rsbnb.com. And I would highly recommend that you share it with your friends and show people what this has degraded to and ensure nothing like that ever happens. Because if people are aware of it, they're not going to let anything like that happen. So that's something I think that needs to be done for the good of society. Anyways, that is my opinion on the current state of the U.S. election, and as I stated, it's something that everyone needs to be aware of. So,
yeah, be ready for next week.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping
a lot of talk.
I'm hoping nothing bad will happen, but based on how far things have gone down this time, I don't preclude anything from either side happening. So, anyways. Let's move on to what we've been doing. So I'll let you start with that.
Fishing, ports, and agility.
Oh, good. Agility. Where are you doing your agility?
Prif, because it's right next to where I'm doing my fishing.
Yeah, and it's practically AFK, right?
Practically.
Yeah, so there's no reason why people shouldn't be competing in the agility skill of the month, right?
Well, if they have to work to get to Prif, then
I can see why they
might not want to.
True. Yeah. All right. So fishing, agility, what else? Anything?
No, that's about it. Like I said, I've been getting back into trying to do some more ports, mostly to collect some stuff again, because my Tetsu is getting on there.
All right. Well, like I said, I do have a huge docket of things to talk about in what have we been doing. And some of these will undoubtedly surprise you. So I'm going to start off at the most recent and mention a huge list of levels that I got, including 67 invention, 97 fishing, mining, and the one that's going to knock you off your chair, 96 dungeoneering.
Oh,
it was from a daily. No, it was from a daily challenge.
Oh, you actually went into the dungeon.
I did, and the reason I went into the dungeon is because I completed my last Melior potion recipe by getting the card from the Garageo guy in that resource dungeon.
Oh, so you're not going to go back in there again until I force you to.
That's probably the case. That's probably the case.
Okay.
But I did get 96 Dungeoneering through this, and I now have all of the potion recipes unlocked. So, yeah, if I ever need any of those combination potions, they're available. And some of them look really interesting for endgame PVM. It's a shame I don't do that. So
yeah, I made it a goal to get as many as I could. I'm still missing a few recipes. I don't know them off the top of my head.
I mean, the best way of doing that is just to go to the Garageo guy daily, do your daily Dungeoneering challenge with the card, and then hope that one day you get the consistent yak, which guarantees you a potion recipe. And that's what I did. I think it took about three months for me to begin on that. So it's not like a huge amount of time, but it wasn't stressful at all. So I'm happy with that. And as we speak, I'm only about 300k away from level 97 mining, which I got for the golden salts in the arc. So
it's nice.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I'll do after that. I guess back to money making. I got to make up about 20 million worth of GP because of my bond spending on the pet I didn't need. Perhaps some nature rune crafting will be in store.
Perhaps
we'll have to wait and see. But I believe that's it.
Divination's also good.
Yeah, yeah, divination.
But I would probably leap on the chance to. Do nature runes.
Yeah, 446 like GP, fun. Double nature runes because I have 92 rune crafting, and essence is only 30 GP each. That's a lot of profit.
And there's nothing currently to boost to three natures yet?
No, I don't think adding anything like that in would be would fit within the game. I'm not trying to suggest anything there.
I was going to say, are you suggesting something?
No, I would never suggest anything that would break the game like that. Never, never, never. Anyways, anything else before we go?
Oh, I think I'm all good.
All right. Well, with that being said, we'll see you guys next week. And thank you for sharing your time with us.
Bye.